Janet Anderson, and this is fifth in a series on creativity and chaos. Is there anyone in the room who hasn't been to any of the other? Oh, there are a few. Okay. Well, I'll talk real fast. You just have to get them on tape. They're on tape. It's too bad. This one is called Living a Creatorful Life. And in some ways, it's sort of a pulling from the other four sessions, but in some ways it's a very separate session too, so you should have no trouble. I might have trouble, but you. So I don't know how many of you have been getting up for aerobics. I have not. But just thinking of the word aerobics when I was working and thinking on this session, I got this image of aerobics of the soul, and so I went and asked Karen what aerobics actually meant, and she said it had to do with oxygen and giving your body more oxygen through your movement. And I said, all right, that's what we're about today. We're getting more oxygen into our souls. There's a part of the beginning of this. I want to talk to you from the position as an artist, and then this will be going through this, and then I want us to sort of shift focus, and then I'll take a different stance. And if you have a hard time in that shift, I'm warning you about it, because I'm speaking from a specific position at the beginning and then more of a dialogical position after that. Okay, what I want to do with living a creatorful life, first off, is talk about life posture. And I'm going to start off with talking about what are some of the assumptions that a creative person lives with all the time and basically uses as, I don't know if it's a creed. Would you call it a creed? You're a potter. So what I want to do is talk about it in that way, but I want you to keep in your mind the concept of creatorful while we talk about this. All right. Now, if you're involved in an artistic or a creative profession, one of the things that you live with all the time is you must begin again and again. You are constantly starting over. You are constantly redoing. And as we used in another session, the idea of rushing headlong along on a horse in the rain, I forget who had written that, it was Anne Truitt, and finding all of a sudden that you've been going in the wrong direction and you have to stop and begin again. And have that energy. And then openness. It's almost like you have to continually keep opening the cookie jar again and again. You can't say, all right, now I've got it, clamp it shut, you know, I'll just work at it from here on in just with what I've got. You have to continually be open to new ideas, new directions, new thoughts, new input. All right, chaos is organizable, workable, inspirational. Chaos is not something that you're afraid, chaos you are afraid of, but you have to handle that with the fact that I can handle this, I can work with it, I can find things in the chaos, I can do something with that. So that's a way of looking at chaos. Change is accepted fact. Now, one of the things, just a little anecdote in relationship to that. A while back, I was at State University of New York, and one of the things students have to do is you put your paintings up, and then they tear them apart verbally. And there was one painting that I had that I really liked, and I was really proud of it, and so I had it up there, and the professor was talking about it, and then he made a comment that he thought that this one area really needed to be a darker pink because it would balance out. So I went home, and fool that I was, I did exactly what he told me, and it ruined the painting as far as I was concerned. Now, to him, it might not have ruined it, but to me, it ruined it. And it's that change that you have to live with and sometimes go too far. And then maybe be able the next time to know the directions that you're going in. Okay, listen and see. We did a whole session on learning to see, so those of you who were at that, this is part of what this section is about. Being able to stop and really listen, really look, really see something in a new way. All of us do things all the time that, believe it or not, we could see it in a new way, even if we've done it every day of our life or, you know, however old we are. We can always see something new. So the idea of stopping and looking and listening, that all of a sudden something can pop out at you and say, ah, this is saying something new to me. Then the idea of trust and hope, which includes patience. So many times you can go into your studio and nothing's coming. You know, you have to sit there and you have to trust that something is going to come, that something is going to evolve out of what you're working on, or new ideas are going to come. And then, of course, the hope of the growth through that. Now, the next thing is participation in process and participation in process. That, in fact, in working on a piece, you are continually in dialogue with that piece you're working on. So you're participating, actually, with what you're working on. It's not like you're only doing it. You're participating with the work. Isn't that right? When you write a screenplay and stuff. Then, of course, participation in the process. Well, anyway, you get the idea. Okay. Then the assumption of something within oneself worth expressing. I can't imagine an artist in any kind of art, and then in other fields too, that would say, there's nothing within worth expressing. I mean, you wouldn't be doing it. You know, you wouldn't be working at it. There is something that, even if you don't verbalize this, and a lot of artists, I don't think, verbalize it, they just do it. And because they are doing, you know that they have to know there's something worth expressing because they're doing it. And you could say that there maybe is a need to express it, but in a backward way, these both are the same type of thing. And then the extending of boundaries are essential. To continue to create, you have to, again and again, move your boundaries further and further, working. Some of these you'll notice relate. And then the concept of wonder and mystery. I don't think that any person working in music or art or writing or anything like that does not have this sense of wonder and mystery, if not just in the area of surprise. You know, when you put two colors together, two sounds together, and it just is overpowering. Okay, now here, touch with something greater. I didn't capitalize that because I wanted to include people who basically would be creative folk but may not have the verbalization of a god or a power. But I do really believe that people who are creative people feel that they, through their work, touch something that is more than themselves. That they are sort of a conduit or something that they can reach into this. We talked about the realm of ideas. Depending on the belief position, it would be whether this would be capitalized or not. But I really feel that there's a feeling amongst people who work in the creative arts that they're in touch with, I don't know if it would be Jungian or what, but something that is a stream or something that they can latch into through their work. And then passion and intimacy. That in fact, in the actual working of the process, there's a passion that can just overcome yourself and your life and fill you, and then it's also intimacy with the work. That you're very close, almost sometimes like a parent to a child or even a lover. And then the responsibility, I love this word, because in a sense what I'm saying with this is that you have the ability to respond again and again to what you're working on. Like Darrell Nelson would be responding, like we talked about this painting a little bit, again and again to what he's put on the canvas and enlarging it and enhancing it and growing with it. So that's the ability to respond, and taking the concept of responsibility that is going to be an interesting thing later on. And that in a sense is an empathy with what you're working on. And then vulnerability. Now, I couldn't split that. I couldn't figure out you're able to vulner. I mean, that doesn't go. So I want to say vulnerability. That, in fact,
able
when...
Able to be vulnerable. Able to be.
Yeah. Well, okay. Able to be vulnerable. Anyway.
I know. Able to be vulnerable.
Okay. That, in fact, when you do create something, it is so much a part of who you are and has often been only known by yourself. And so that in putting it out, it's an extension of yourself and you're very vulnerable. I mean, it's like being naked a lot of times and you don't want people to see it, and yet you have to, because that's part of the creating. Although there are purists who say, and some trains of thought in the arts who say, no one has to see it, it's the creating. But I think this vulnerability, not only with your work, but even with yourself, with your work. Okay, so those are some, and I don't know, the other people who are working creatively in their lives, you may have some other things that I missed that are pounding on your brain right now, want to get out. Do you have something you want to add to that?
You did a pretty good job.
This is something now I want to keep it up here. And what I want us to do is to think about that list in relationship to the image of a creator God. Now, if you take the creed and say, you know, I believe in God the creator, okay. And if you say in your belief statements, or we say, that I am created in the image of God, and we put those two together and say, okay, then in a sense, I am the living image of this creator God. And we know that people who create go through and live with all these aspects are part of creativity. Three things I want to ask. What are your feelings about this list in relationship to the concept of creator God and yourself as a living image of that creator God? Are there any additions? And then how do these processes of living relate to ethics, morality, the liturgy, and your image of God in total? Okay? Now, we have to remember that we are a Trinitarian people. Lutherans are. And one of the things I believe we've done is we've skewed the Trinitarian concept to way over on the Jesus side. And this is bringing in full equality with the concept of an active spirit and the idea of Jesus, the person, Son of God, to this idea of creator. Is that making sense to you? And I'm asking you, if in looking at this list, if you have any immediate feelings or any immediate reactions or no, or this doesn't fit, or anything like that.
I think love comes into it, in that you to express love to somebody else, you have to begin with yourself.
Okay. I knew love was going to come up. All right. But David and I were talking about this last night. And say, no, love is different. I think, now, bear with me for a moment here, that in the act of creating, love is possibly present, but is not necessarily present for creation. That passion, intimacy, and so on, be there. So I got into thinking, saying, well, we say that, you know, God is love, but what does that mean? So I got this image of, you know, the old triangle, of course, and of course the split in the triangle. Now, if you take the concept of the creation part, or the creator part, that love is part of it, you know, and the concept of an active spirit and the active spirit being part of love, then in a sense we could say that at the very focus, the Creator, God, the Spirit, active Spirit, and then the concept or the relationship with God and Jesus here in the Son, that then love is part of all three. But in fact, I'm not quite ready to say, for in my personal life, that in the act of creation, love is one of the processes. But that depends on the day and what side of the bed I got up on and so on. But anyway, so I knew love was going to come up, but I did not put it in this list because I'm not so sure that that is, you know, essential in the act of creation itself. Some of these other people might have a different opinion.
Well, I'm going to be real vulnerable.
All right.
I haven't always had a good concept of Jesus. So, I've always had, and so I like this, because I kind of believe in a power greater than myself.
Mm-hmm.
And that can come, and I can see that in other people. I believe in God working through people. And I can believe in the fact that that when something wonderful has happened, either through a painting or through music or through drama, that it's not the person totally, that it's something, a greater force.
Yeah, and so what you're saying to you, so is that the idea of Creator, you in the image, the person in the image is here as much as the Spirit acting. So,
I can believe, I can believe in that Holy Spirit part, uh-huh. And that Spirit part, and I can believe in that power. And Jesus, it comes and goes.
Yeah.
Because you gotta
I have some of the same feelings.
I wasn't there.
Well, I want to say that besides that, an interesting way to look at it is, well, see if I can say this clearly, that if you have an image of yourself as the living image of God, and if you have a feeling of an active spirit, the basis for why you do things is not guilt that you're sinful and unclean and you need redemption and so on, but it's that you have, that you are involved in the hope that you are a phrase that many people are, co-creator with God, that you are an active being. It's a reason to express your belief for a positive reason. And I feel much more enlivened by that methodology or life posture myself. That's not denying that someone else may believe another way, but it seems to me that this image speaks more to how I've experienced my life than, let's say, the focus being on need for redemption. Although they're all three parts, you know.
Yeah, and then I go to established religion and learn about the triune God and learn about the educated part of believing. So I can put it all together. So I can put that part in there too.
Mm-hmm.
The other part I learned away from the religion.
Ah, but did you learn it away from the religion? That's the part that's really exciting, because you may say, I learned it away from what someone told me, but you do believe in an active spirit. And if you believe yourself in the image of the Creator God, then it comes from within. Do you understand what I'm trying to say to you? Am I stomping on your...
No.
Because I'm maybe using you a little bit here, too, to say something.
I thought she was saying away from the established church, she learned certain things.
Yes.
About.
Uh-huh. Because I didn't like the established church. Because they repeated the same thing over and over and over. Now, how could that be very... How could I get into that?
That wasn't very creative.
No, it's the same thing. They say a certain thing at a certain time. They say it this way, and but I'm beginning through the help of my pastor to see the importance of a liturgy,
mm-hmm.
because it does help you believe. Mm-hmm. It just puts another another power there.
Yeah, one of the things this does too is it takes away the image of father as parent, and that you are a servant. It brings up the idea more that you are an actor, that you begin out of yourself rather than as a response to someone saying you must do this. That it is from within. Pardon?
That's a Jim Act Ryan.
Go ahead.
Dorothy Sayers in her book, The Mind of the Maker, has this kind of parallel or analogy between the Trinitarian God and the artist, and potentially all of us. And I can't quite remember. I think it goes something like this, that there's the idea that the artist has, mm-hmm. that would be analogous to the creator. And then there's the work, and that would be the parallel there is the incarnation, Jesus Christ. And then there's the effect that the artist no longer, I think, has as control of that. Mm-hmm. The work is there and it's
spread around.
And that's the spirit. That's the spirit. See, yeah. But I mean, I get a little. I like those kinds of neat. And it's a marvelous book. And people, it's in our library here. And it's a wonderful insight into a kind of working out of Trinitarian things in our world. But I also get a little nervous of them because they're a bit neat.
Yeah.
Even more chaos in there.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. I have the same kind of a problem with this business of putting things in such neat categories, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. And it's like it's three separate entities or whatever. And to me, so much of religion has been so organized. And very recently, I've been having a lot of questioning and struggles, which have come out of my getting more involved in reading some feminist literature and thinking of things from a feminist perspective and seeing how really the Judeo-Christian tradition came out of a very patriarchal kind of a way of thinking. And so I'd appreciate more coming on these two concepts of openness and then chaos, and then you say as organizable, workable, and
inspiration.
Chaos is terribly uncomfortable. And what
definitely,
I'm going
yeah.
through is a period of chaos in my thinking, and it's very, very difficult.
But chaos is necessary.
Immediately I want to organize. But then I think, am I trying to develop the same kind of a thing that I'm trying to get away from?
Yeah, I've been in three situations where I've been semi-new institutions where freedom has been there, and as the institution has grown, it's calcified its thought. You know, what was it, one quote we did another time, I think it was Anne Truitt said, if only we could have the process of thinking without hardening it,
yeah.
or something like that. The thought without hardening the thought, the process of thinking without hardening the thought. I think that's part of the teeter-totter, the need to organize and at the same time continue to push it, put in new water, you know, the dishwater where it's getting dirty and you keep adding the clean water. But it's the balance of both, because I don't want to say, hey, I just got to hang out in this chaos, you know. I'm basically gonna say, no, I'm an organizer. I put things in neat piles. I make lists. As David knows, I'm always making a list. That's part of being who I am. So I don't want to say that's bad. So I think it's a balance. But not being afraid of a new messy room.
And still to be able to maintain that sense of openness.
Mm-hmm.
I know I find within the writing area that I do, I like to write in different disciplines because I don't want to get stuck within one, because then it's so easy, if you're successful in one area, to repeat that process and never grow beyond. And I know writers that do, they strictly write in one area. You have poets that write only poetry, and they may expand into, because there's a lot of area within that. But I'm always afraid myself if I will get stuck That's why I don't strictly stick to script writing, because I don't. It becomes easy after a while. You know the process. You know what's involved with that, and that's why I appreciated what you had said earlier, how you had done Canvas and you moved on to something else to explore the edges of another area. And I think,
well, what you've done is you've structured in to your process openness at the same time you've had a structure. Because you're saying, I'm trying different things at the same time. And then, of course, by doing that, they're interrelating in your mind, too. Anyone else have anything, feeling, response to this list? Immediate feeling, response?
Janet, have you, in your series, or perhaps even earlier this morning, mentioned Matthew Fox and creation centered spirituality?
Thank you. I did not place him there. I wanted to suggest to you.
His desire to be a corrective to what is not false, but what is he feels overplayed, a redemption centered spirituality. Mm-hmm. He said there is also a creation centered spirituality that the church has, his tradition, Roman Catholicism, I think Lutheranism as well, have largely abandoned, and we need to return to it for fullness.
Thank you. That's fantastic. The bookstore has about five of his books, I think.
Yeah, the Original Blessing is one.
Yeah, and the one about the bear. Yeah, and this book especially, we all the way home, is a very interesting book to read. It's eye opening up for me, and also just to read. It's fun. It's a fun book. Another person that I have found, well, about 10 years ago. It's been longer than that. Was Sam Keen. Comes from a different background, but To a Dancing God. It's not here in the bookstore, and I don't even know if it's still in print. I think it is. But he's got a book, Apology for Wonder, and he also wrote a book, What to Do When You're Bored and Blue. Anyway, he's another person that is really struggling with what it means to be a person, a creative person, and what does that mean in relationship to what we believe and how we structure our belief. But this one, Matthew Fox, is in the bookstore, and he's a very interesting person. I advise you to pick it up if you can. Matthew Fox? No. This is not at all. I don't read difficult books. It can't be said in a semi-simple way. Yes.
Does it have pictures?
No. No drawings. That's too bad. No. Maybe we should write to him and say what we need. The authors enjoy their response.
I can't make the abstractions in my life come out as well as you do. I have a lot of difficulty with words. But to perhaps be of help to you, I spent most of my life in Oklahoma, which is the middle of the Bible Belt. And this is one place where the Pentecostals have been coming up. They have been growing by leaps and bounds. The AOC has been declining. I don't know if there's any connection, but nevertheless. So you can't live there and not get a lot of that. And I tend to be a very visual person. When I prayed to God, he really was the figure on the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel. You know, I just couldn't get that image out of my head. And the same way with Christ. Any painter will tell you that there are Jesus parts. And you can recognize a painting of Jesus by 20 different artists. But you know that's Jesus. That's because there are certain parts that you have to put in. And finally, probably through the Pentecostals and hearing so much about it, I began to relate more of the Trinity to the Holy Spirit. Mm-hmm. First of all, I can't visualize him, so I don't have that image in my way. God is too removed. Jesus has come and gone, but the Holy Spirit, he left with us as the comforter.
Yeah,
and I feel that is still with me of the three, much the stronger.
Not necessarily just the comforter, though. I want to challenge you too. Don't you also mean as one who goes before, one who is there, with you, but also before you. Do you have some of that feeling,
yes,
too?
I mean,
and I have no problem with that nebulousness. In fact, I like that.
I do, too. I don't like this image,
yeah,
man-made image between,
yeah,
me and my creator.
And some of you say that's very mystical, but, you know, I really like that. And I think one of the difficulties that I have had with, like you're saying, the Bible Belt or Pentecostal religion is that, you know, you have to be this guilty, horrible person thing, and so that you can be redeemed. You know what I'm saying? No, that's not the way I experienced my life. Yes, I do things that I'm not proud of. There are things that I'm weak and so on and so forth, but that's not my whole self. And so that I have some of that too. Wait a minute, what does this mean? And then I, with you, said, but this concept of spirit, and I latched on to that. That's, I like that nebulousness. I like that something that I participate in. The part of this that goes with that, especially to me, is my responsibility, in the,
yes,
sense of responsibility and responsibility.
Right.
It was within me that I can respond.
Right.
You know, rather than I'm going to have somebody tell me, it's there. You know, it's a... That's exciting. And that, it goes right along with that excitement of, well, I'm thinking of you with your, this woman, deep sea, scuba dives, yeah, and she has these fantastic photos. You should ask to see them. When did you start doing that? About 15 years ago or something? And just, she gave me this fantastic image the other morning. You maybe can even enlarge on it, but we were talking about, she says, you can just curl yourself up in the water and just float with the current, and you pass all these fantastically beautiful forms and colors. And it was such a fantastic image to me. You know, besides, I'm standing there looking at all these photos so I could see things. I thought, what a great image. You know, the concept
of... I would probably say it's a retreat to the womb.
Oh, that's all right. There's really nothing wrong with a womb in its place, right? But no, that's a fantastic image. Did someone else? John?
No, you're putting this image before us as creator God.
This is as a human being working creatively and striving to be as creative as possible. This is in fact what I experience. Okay? And if we go sort of in a backward thinking, if this is what I understand creativity is, and we believe, if I say, I believe in a creator God, what does that mean then? Or if it says, I am in the image of God. So it's more a putting side by side two ideas and seeing how they affect each other, rather than saying, I don't think I'm the kind of person who say, no, this is God here, you know. But of course it's there, because I'm juxtaposing it by saying creative.
You're suggesting these are attributes of God.
Possibly.
It's kind of interesting to think about God at the creation of the world, sitting, standing, you want a picture of, and in kind of human form, but, mm-hmm, you know, before the canvas, and saying, how much that came.
Yeah. I think the part that I really like the most is this vulnerability. You know, if we really take seriously, I'm saying if, because, you know, I know we're all different people in this room, but if we take seriously that we are living images of God, the vulnerability then comes with our lack of response. If we choose to not respond to what God has placed before us, then God is vulnerable through us. That's just an interesting thing to think about for me.
If I could just, I like that too, and I think sort of coming of age in the 60s, part of what that generated for myself and a lot of my friends was a tremendous amount of anger that first, anger that was generated out of disappointment and injustice and pain. And a tremendous amount of that anger, it sort of leveled a lot of belief in institutions and justice. And finally, for a lot of people, got to, you know, angry at God, that that somehow there's this idea that's perhaps not theologically justifiable, that God is control. You know, somewhere, somebody's in control. And a lot of anger is generated at that, whether there is somebody there in control or not. And the idea of the vulnerability of God, that perhaps God is in pain in a situation like that, was just, for myself, sort of helped to defuse that anger. And so, you know, that's a helpful, it's just a helpful idea for me.
You ever heard of the book, The Pain of God?
Yeah, right.
Does anyone have anything else they want to say? Special?
Well, Jen.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, Charlie.
No, go ahead.
No, you. No, no, you. No, 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 you.
I love the posture of what you've introduced of the Creator, and if we are that we are the image, and what we need is what somebody said earlier in my stay here is we need the Holy Spirit. And that was not mine. That's somebody else's.
That's a good image. Yeah, good words. So,
Charlie. I was going to respond to your consideration about adding love. If love is an emotion, then I think that's probably a proper exclusion. But if love is concern or care about, then it probably enters, because obviously a creative person cares about what they need to express or the object of that too.
I don't want to jump too quick. You maybe had another sentence.
No, that's just...
Yeah, it's a difficult place because it was almost that love was more than this. If I put it in the list, I'd be limiting it. You know, it was a feeling as I was going to write it down. It was like, well, it just doesn't quite fit in this category. Maybe it's all this is love or something, you know? That if I just put it here, it's just one of the many. And I'm saying, wait, that's not right, you know?
Does love require an object to be in a relationship with?
Another remark, just as you were visiting, I am reminded of Tom Potok's book, My Name is Asher Love, or Live, and that goes through. You can really see the agony of all of that in that creative development, you know, I think.
How did you say his first name?
Chaim.
C-H-A-I-M.
It's a hard...
Isn't Hanukkah that too? Hanukkah, really?
Yeah.
Okay, one of the things I would like to, this is hard, going to be hard to do, but can we talk a little bit about what this image, if we accepted this, say, you know, we're going to operate out of this as at least one third of our definition, our belief, and there's ourselves involved in this, how does this relate then to ethics and morality? What does this change in how you have viewed certain ethical things in relationship to social justice and morality in relationship to other people? This is like, you know, people get doctorates in this. This is huge, these are huge subjects. I'm just wondering if any of you had any thoughts in that direction. It's sort of like saying, what does this change? We're talking on a personal level, it feels better, it feels closer, you know, an expression to what I felt, but then how does this change my life, you know, as far as how I work it through each day? Am I asking the question clearly, or am I...
It's always easier, I think a lot of people, it's easier to have someone tell you or come yes or no, like in an ethic to morality, that this is right and this is wrong. Mm-hmm. But using those and as an artist in my own right, I always have trouble because it always seems to be like that process, they're evolving. When I meet with people, when I say, you know, such and such is wrong, and then I meet a person that's in that situation that I have not been in, it always changes the boundaries for me. Then I'm always thinking, well, if I was in that situation, you know, would it be different? You know, I mean, would my ideas on morality, for instance, a good friend who for a long time during the 60s there lived with various people, okay, various men, and I always thought that that was wrong. Been taught that that was wrong, okay, but then when I looked at her closely and what she was going through, I couldn't say, look, that's wrong, that's evil, you're going to go, you know, straight where for doing that. And I couldn't do it because her, you know, it was part of dealing with that, that it was, she was very vulnerable. I couldn't come to, I had to love her in spite of whatever it was. Mm-hmm. And so what I say, every time I want an answer that's solid, yes, this is right, no, this is wrong, when I come dealing at it with my creativity, I can't do it. I have to deal with the people that are involved in that. And it just, it stops.
Hmm. I think a wonderful book is Alice Walker, The Color Purple.
Yes.
Yes. Oh. Yeah. Talk in terms of rules and do's and don'ts.
Then
you can read a book like that, and
what I loved was her finding, or them, the blacks, finding one passage of the New Testament that said Jesus had fuzzy hair. And they could relate to him because he too has fuzzy hair. And I could just see us with one of those pictures in our narthex, you know, when people walked into church, it looks it.
Part of even reading that, just reading that book, is part of working with the boundaries, extending boundaries, and is essential. Picking that up, and sometimes I have books that I know I should read, and then I have books that are surprises to me. You know, you pick them up, and then it just, all of a sudden, there's a new way of looking at something, and that. That serendipity is sort of the fun part of living with this idea that extending boundaries is part of or essential to life.
I think one thing that relates very well to global ethics, whether you're running a corporation or whether you're evangelizing, is the part about being in process with. That you don't go in and this is our way of doing things and you're going to learn our way of doing things. And we're going to run this company, and we're going to run you at the same time. But a working together with, so that we don't necessarily export our Western culture with our Western religion. We don't necessarily even export our Western religion and say this is Christianity, and you are going to follow by our rules. But that we let some indigenous culture work its way in as well and learn from them at the same time, you know, so that we're in process with each other.
And it really does, you know, if you live with the idea that everything has to be a certain way, it gets boring, but it also gets to be really difficult when you get in a very complex situation, like going to a whole other national way of thinking, you know, or people. But if you go in with this as a given, you know, it's easier to flow and to know who you are in relationship. You know, sort of like, they're not a threat to me. They're different, but they're not a threat to me.
And being willing to be vulnerable, mm-hmm. and to be willing to be taught, to go in, you know, to a culture with the idea that I know more than they do, and to be confronted with the idea that No, we can all be taught.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if I should put that in there somewhere, willing to be taught. I wonder which one.
Well, you...
Openness.
Yeah, the openness and the inspirational out of chaos, but even that might be...
Is there a way when you do a painting, or maybe talk about this at some point, or when you do your writing, that you are in conversation with... what you're doing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if someone could get into my mind while I'm working on a painting, they'd really think I was weird, crazy. I mean...
Okay,
good friend. No, but I mean, especially most of my work has become very abstract. I don't really always understand the product very well myself. I know it's finished, and I know I've participated in its process, but I have to live with it a while myself. And just thinking of this last piece where I was breaking apart chunks of styrofoam and putting it in paint and then putting that on, so it had this sort of knobby effect. And some, you know, these, it would put it on and then a piece would fall. I'd say, no, don't do that, no, you know, or I'm talking to this styrofoam falling, you know, or the color, not, you know, that's it, stay right there.
Does it teach you as you're doing it? Talking about that.
Yeah, and I think I'm doing a very simple thing right now. Very, very simple. I mean, I'm watching paint move. I mean, amongst other things, that it's a visual lesson I'm learning about lines and flowing together and what something, how a bump somewhere can affect the flow and how a valley somewhere. And so that's a very simple thing. I mean, I'm like a child, I suppose, sometimes just learning from that.
I know I find the same with writing, because each project, I get a lot of assignments, and sometimes I look at them and think, oh, how am I ever going to get this through this thing? And every time there's something that comes out of that that is always sort of a serendipity, wow, I don't know that before, or sometimes it's just working with the people that I work with that I get that. And I think having done a fair bit with Native people, the thing that always has become a very strong image for me is the sacred circle that at least the Blackfoot people work with the four divisions, with each division having an animal totem. And the purpose in their life, they were people of the shield. In other words, they had shields outside of their teepees, and these were their sacred part of their spiritual life. And that those totems, the part of their life purpose was to complete the circle, to get to know about, if they were born in spring, for instance, they were probably a mouse person. And a mouse person always sees just the things that are very close. They crawl in the grass and they see only the close things. But in another person born in another season is an eagle person, and they see way up high, everything a great expanse, but they don't see the things way up close. The buffalo person is a person that wanders very far, and the wolf person is a person that has family. And those four things, they strive in their life to learn more. They learn to see not only close up if they're a mouse person, but try to talk to the eagle people and find out how they can see so far and how they... And that has
so in a sense, they're a given in one way, but that part of it is to try in their life is to
expand beyond that. Yeah, and for me, that's really, that concept has been very helpful in my own spirituality and life. Is that their spiritual concept of how to grow within their life?
Yeah, in a sense, you're saying not only is this exciting, but you were able to participate in this excitement because you were open, rather than saying, oh, you know.
Yeah.
I can't relate to
it.
Yeah.
To me, to see it with the shaman telling about it was an incredible excitement. Like when you viewed the painting with the three sunbursts, to me it was like that. It was a tremendous aha, because it really touched my own spirituality, saying, I can learn from that. I can, you know, from my own Christian faith, I can still take something from that.
Yeah. I had a similar experience to that too in Chaco Canyon in New Mexico. The giant Kiva. I don't know if any of you know about Chaco Canyon, but it's a fantastic place. Anyone who calls himself an American should visit this place. It's ancient Indian dwellings, really, but that four stories high out in the middle of nowhere, and community that built it. I mean, it's just fantastic. But in the giant Kiva, we were alone, and the wind was howling, and we were in this circular room in the earth. And it was like they were still there, you know. I was participating in something that was more than them and myself, and it was, you know, I don't know, I can't explain it, but it was, you know, when you feel like you've been shaken.
I still wanted to make an additional response to that, the artist and the conversation with the material, because there's more than one novelist that talks about writing to the point where the characters become alive, and then letting the characters actually decide the story. And then there's a whole gamut of emotions from the way that these alive characters actually decide the novel, because it's not always the way the novelist wanted it to end. Or, you know, and it's a real, it's sort of funny because you think, well, a novelist is writing it, but there's a real sense in which something has been created which is not in the control of the novelist. The novelist has brought it to life, and then it assumes a control of its own.
One of the authors I was reading was talking about King Lear, that in fact, King Lear was not a person. Shakespeare created King Lear almost, and then as King Lear evolved as a person, it became a help for us, sort of in a sense, to touch the universe or to be beyond King Lear. It wasn't a parody. There was no King Lear, so it wasn't a parody of King Lear. Or like Moby Dick as a symbol that becomes more than what the author is planning it to be. Of course, as a high school person reading Moby Dick, I just thought it was a long book.
Hard to read,
long book. And I just saw the PBS special on Melville, and they're saying all this imagery and this humor. And I thought, I got to read that again, because I certainly didn't get any of that when I read it. I have to move my boundaries a little bit more. Does anyone else have anything special? I think the main thing, well, there's no main thing, one of the things for this week for me that has been is I have basically handled these five sessions in, I suppose you'd say, in a non-linear creative fashion. I spent a lot of time putting a lot of things and spent a lot of time on my own prior to this time thinking, but I didn't really know what I was going to say today until after yesterday. And so for me, it's been a very creative thinking, co-thinking with all of you, those of you who've been in and out these sessions, that has really helped me grow and has helped me to be involved in some of this in relationship to this subject. Because when I began on Monday, and we were talking about boredom and dis-ease, which was the easiest one maybe to talk about, I didn't really know how it was going to all tie. And yet last night as I sat and just listened and got quiet, and this idea verbalized it. See, I often operate as if I verbalize things, but I haven't. I'm just operating on nonverbal assumptions within myself. And so I just wanted to say thank you to those of you who have helped me verbalize some of these things, but also really I felt a great joy in the participation with you on this subject, because I think in doing that together, we've maybe made it more than one person, we've made it more open, we've made it exciting, and I appreciate it, and I thank you.